Yes, I am like 20 minutes late for my own podcast, which is very bad, but I feel that I arrived at just the right time to hear people having a go at late in life. It's like the sacred cow. Well, the whole, frankly, Edinburgh, you know, I've been coming to Edinburgh for 143 years, man and boy, and it's kind of one of the sacred cows.
Well,
really?
I'll tell you this.
Tell us.
So,
who are you?
I'm Amos Gill, Australian comedian, good friend of Fred Southern. Okay, now Fred produced that forever. Yeah. And growing up in Australia at the Adelaide Fringes, she would always say to me, "Oh, one day I'll fucking throw you at Late Live, you arrogant little fucker, and they're gonna tear you apart. You prince and preen around the stage, and the Scots will sort you out." And it's been built up to me. Mickey D,
yeah,
one of my heroes, was just like, "Oh, I'll wait till you get in the bear pit." And I went out last night, and it was, I mean, it might as well have been a 5 o'clock in the fucking afternoon show.
Really?
There was nothing. Everyone's just sort of pleasantly sitting there, and I went from a story about being molested by my friend's older brother. And
that sounds like fun.
It was good fun at the time, and even in memory. And last night, it just felt like a regular gig. I don't know what I'd put. In my head, I thought I was going to be going back and forth, and I was yelling at them about Scottish independence, and I thought they were going to heckle.
Yep.
And in the end, I just came across like a bit of a dickhead because I was being nasty, hoping someone's going to pull me up on this. And they
was everybody there very young?
The youth
are shit. Confrontation.
Well, I've been getting a lot of heckles from the youth. It's called the Edinburgh Student Review, and they keep giving me 1-star reviews, you see. That's where their heckle comes from. Yes, they said...
That's how they do it. They're very passive aggressive.
They're very passive aggressive. Yeah. They hold on to it, went home. I got the best review I've ever had. It was an Australian girl who's over here as a student. Yes. And she said, "I went to Amos School because I thought it would remind me of home, and all it reminded me of is why I left. He was a boorish, vulgar bogan."
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well done.
And I immediately went back to Brett Vincent, and he was like, "We can sell that."
Absolutely. Now, we have here...
It's Mark Quinn.
Yeah, Mark Quinn. Now, we're allowing Mark in, I've had a word, on the basis that he doesn't drag us all down into the vortex of his own inexorable depression. Now, do your best, Mark.
I'm going to try.
Well done. You're sounding quite cheery so far.
I'm pretending I'm happy for you.
That's good. It's not fooling me, but then I know you.
Yeah, you know me. So my issue...
One of you... What do you mean, my issue? Like, you've only got one.
At
this point in time. Good,
In context of Late in Life...
Right, good.
...is it's not very late... That's it.
Right, okay. It is live, but like...
The thing is, my show's at 1:50 a.m.
A.M.
1:50 a.m.
So, dear you know. God.
So I don't like other people saying they're late.
Good point.
And mine is a bear pit. So it's.
Oh, I
which
want
is
to come
fine,
along now.
Because it's what I wanted. I don't even close the doors on the venue. I let people wander in.
How do the staff feel about the 1:50 slot?
They love me.
They love you?
Yeah, they love me. I give them things like donuts.
Oh, well done.
So, you know.
So where is the venue?
Banshee Labyrinth.
Banshee Labyrinth.
Tried to assassinate the president sitting next to me.
Yeah, yes.
They are doing something. It's crazy. There's an event.
But it's so... And you get audiences?
Yeah,
At that time of night.
The thing I've learned about myself and the people who like me is there are like a select few that will come to whatever.
Speak quickly. We're being invaded.
It's fine. It's just fireworks.
Someone
did a trans joke over there and they've come for them, something chronic. The killing squads have arrived. Yeah.
And so...
it's the Guardian Jackbird.
You would not be welcome in my audience. But it's...
Yep.
But my fans will come to something...
This is fantastic. I feel like I'm Kate Ady somewhere here in a bunker.
This is creating an atmosphere that's very similar to being in one of my gigs.
Excellent.
Like being heckled by actual fireworks during the gig.
Amos Gill in the Donbass.
To digress, the show a few years back that you came to, You Win, You Lose, I had to incorporate the fireworks into my show because they went off violently. some nights. I mean, but I couldn't rely on them. So.
If you had planned it and you had to pay for that,
it costs a lot.
It'd be a fortune. Now, also joining us around the table, although in body, not in spirit, don't think I haven't seen you looking at your fucking phone all the time. These guys have been chatting. President Obonjo, welcome to the table, sir.
Thank you.
I'm almost glad Stephen hasn't got his camera out tonight. Quite an alarming shirt.
Yes.
But I feel we have to go straight to the heart of the tragedy. Mm. You lost everything in a British Airways-related luggage catastrophe.
Yes.
Tell us. Fuck's sake, honestly, you make me work here. Tell us about it.
Tell you about it.
Honestly, something happened.
Yeah. So on Sunday, it wasn't British Airways, by the way.
Oh, sorry.
Very, very poor president. So I went on Linear.
All right.
There is no private airline for your nation.
No private jet, and not even EasyJet. And I was traveling all the way from King's Cross to Edinburgh Waverley.
And they lost your luggage on a train.
I lost my luggage on a train.
No.
It's a slow moving vehicle.
It was a slow. I honestly can't believe what actually happened. Three expensive vintage uniforms. You know, comedy critics have always said he has no jokes. He hides behind the uniform. So I just thought, I have no fucking uniform. At one point I thought, let me get in touch with Kate Copstick. Maybe she has a link to Comedy in the Dark. Maybe I could have done. But on a serious note.
Was there no second-hand army disposals?
No, I wasn't even thinking about that. I was just thinking about, you know what it's like to lose your luggage?
Oh, yeah, it's bad. Yeah.
But no, he's lost his act.
Yeah, I lost my act.
But whoever found that bag must have been very concerned.
Well, look, let's even talk about the bag because I don't even know where it is. But this
the thing is, there are no shortage of soldiers in Edinburgh. Late at night, you go down the meadows, you'll find one or two without their uniform on.
But you know what's really interesting? Is my last comedy special was called Stolen. And then all of a sudden, I have a stolen luggage. I just didn't know what to think about and how. And it was on Sunday and then Monday, because this was just a very short trip. You know, I just wanted to test my new show.
Do you think the universe might be sending you a message? You had your character stolen. You've had your suit stolen. Now you've just got the jokes.
Yes. Yeah, I think they're trying to tell me it's time to kill the character. Because there's always something that happens whenever I come to the fringe. It's unbelievable.
I mean, something always happens at the fringe. I mean, literally the first day of the first fringe you ever came to, I got hit by a bus.
What? I was like, oh my God, everyone a critic.
And it summed up how the fringes were going to be from that point onwards. Because what happened was, so I was walking down a path, a bus went round a car, and it came over the path when it went round the car and hit me, spun me round. I fell off the path and was standing in the road next to the bus, just scraping by my back. And none of my friends saw and would not believe that I'd been hit by a bus. So I went round all day saying, I've been hit by a bus. And they were going, stop it. We know you've got a weird sense of humour.
Well, exactly. To be fair, with you, Mark, it's sometimes very difficult to tell.
It is.
Sometimes he's just in a very bad mood.
And it was about 8 hours later when someone said, Have you been hit by a bus? I went, I was trying to tell you all day. It's the only thing I've said.
No, what was really interesting. Like.
Exactly. The metaphoric bus, the black bus.
The boy who cried wolf.
No, yeah. What it is that I have one of the main skill sets I've got as a comedian is if I tell the truth, people think I'm lying. And if I lie, people believe me. Mm-hmm. That's kind of one of the things I don't know why. It's just like that's something naturally that goes with.
It's the con man gene.
It is like a con man gene.
I was just saying, you have snatched victory, maybe putting it too highly, but you've snatched something from the jaws of LNER's incompetence or somebody's fucking thievery. And I've seen you tarting yourself around the old town.
Look, this was not planned. It was not planned. I've always avoided wanting to dress like Idi Amin Dada, but the opportunity arose. He's a former Ugandan dictator.
Yes, I know.
And he used to wear a kilt, called himself the last king of Scotland. So I thought, what am I going to do? Come the 8th, 7th of August, I have a new show that I have to do. So I went into a shop and I bought a pattern, you know, Scottish outfit.
He looks now, fabulous, to be fair.
This is what I did not know. I did not know that the Scottish people, honestly, that when you wear a kilt, people assume that you haven't got any boxers on.
Yeah.
So when I did the show yesterday, everybody was focusing on whether I had something
they were looking
underneath.
Yeah.
It was just ridiculous.
And did you? Come on.
State secret.
I hope you did, because I've been told that a lot of the late shows, nudity is also banned. So I hope that you
nudity is banned?
Nudity is banned in many places, yes.
Really?
Yes, that
I got a question for you.
Go.
If that luggage is found.
Yes.
And there are three expensive army suits in there. What would the person think when they open it?
Well, they would think that you were some kind of fetish king.
They think it's a king daddy.
Either that or, you know, MI5 have already got it and are investigating.
I think they would assume it's something to do with the tattoo and it'll be sent up to the castle.
But was it just military uniforms, or did you also put some of your own casual wear?
There was casual wear, but luckily for me, I had my laptop, and my material, and my phone in my briefcase. So it wasn't really a problem. It's sort of it was like just the uniforms.
Thank goodness you saved that shirt.
Yes.
And then also some like Hoka running sneakers and like other sort of just athletic leisure wear, or what else was in there?
But I think I became non-binary on the train.
I have to ask, was there anything kinky in the cases that you lost?
No, there wasn't anything. No, there wasn't anything kinky. But it's just having to explain to this linear member of staff that what he said, what was in the bag? I said, I am an African dictator, even though I was. He must have thought, this guy is loony, you know? And I was screaming, my suitcase is gone. Because all I could think of is, fuck, my show is, that is it. That is the end of my show. Until I just calmed down. I have to say, again, sorry, that the response from the comedy community, people just turned it into fun. Because they said, yes, Conor Banjoko, who you don't know about Conor Banjoko, this is the E4 BBC Studios episode. Someone tried to steal my character and they called him Conor Banjoko. So they basically said, he's taking revenge.
Well, this is the joy of being the straight white male stand-up comedian, is that it's black jeans and then a black t-shirt. It's nothing wrong. It's just that. It's the uniform.
You're quite an endangered species.
Yeah, I've been saying it at this festival now. I have come to terms with the fact that like being a straight white male stand-up is like being a gay in the 1970s. We just have to sort of meet in parks. We catch up. Like we're all like, we're not meant to congregate. People think we're up to no good.
Absolutely.
We go to glory holes and we don't fuck each other in there. We just say nasty things through the holes.
But
we're like, the Women's World Cup's not quite as good as the men's, is it?
There's now
run away.
a whole comedy world. You know, at least you're black. That's good. I was going to say brownie points, but you're just very strange, Mark.
I agree. Like, if anyone's listening to the podcast, this is not what you will get at a show.
No.
Like,
no,
just to clarify, it won't be like this. Yeah. I mean, if anyone else did what I was doing, it's 5 minutes of material. And at my show, it overran by 20.
Yeah, it's an experience. It's not necessarily an enjoyable experience, but it is.
It's curated nonetheless. It's something. Yeah.
Can I ask, as you're the last person on it in the evening, overruns are absolutely fine?
Yeah, fine. Absolutely fine.
We were just talking before you got here, and he said he goes for giggles, not laughs. Like, he says he doesn't like laughs.
I've been
giggles.
Seeing his shows for years. I've never giggled.
Now, I have got a really good skill.
Yeah.
And that's that if I dislike someone, I can perform the comedy around them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That would be me. So, I suppose you're all your own little minority groups. You're just strange.
There's a lot of strange people. You just don't know about them because they're strange.
That's true. I mean, I am really hoping, and maybe you can let me know if it's even going to be any good or not. I want to go and see... I've not quite persuaded the Scotsman, but I'm still trying to let me review all three Consignia shows. And it will just be one completely incomprehensible review of three incomprehensible shows.
Everything about, you know, everything about yep. Insignia is completely incomprehensible. It's a sketch troupe, a sketch troupe slash punk affectation that varied wildly from show to show that made the late slot I'm in viable. Because one year the Free Fringe said, we said, can we have a slot? This is what Phil Jarvis said. He runs Consignia. And they said, well, we haven't got anything. You wouldn't be on until 1:50. And he went, I'll take it. So that Consignia kind of invented the 1:50 a.m. slot, because we're like, Consignia overrun. Like a...
Massively.
Regularly two-hour-long shows, if there's the slot to do
so,
it.
So 1:50, what is your day? Like, at what point are you getting yourself... Because you're not sleepy?
The thing to do, first
of all... What do you
do? He performs the butts.
No, the first thing is, I'm doing no guest spots. I won't appear before that time slot right. is fringe, because that means that my day is geared up to that time, and it gives me the day free to do anything I want to do, any changes
like
to
sleep.
The show, yeah. like sleep, and if I need to stay in bed till 3 p.m, I can. So no guest spots if you're that late, because it's madness. And to anyone you perform to at 2 p.m. is often not going to still be awake at 1:50 a.m. anyway. In fact, there's other than a small amount
it's
of people...
It's a hard flyer post-show, isn't it?
Yeah.
You guys enjoyed me tonight.
Yeah.
Stick around, 1:50.
Actually, getting people to come back to my show is quite easy. I get lots of repeat custom.
Well, but the homeless are everywhere in Edinburgh, and it's a free show.
Actually, normally, if you're doing that time slot, the people you get keep coming back are... Edinburgh locals who are working around the fringe and
nurses,
can't see other
Nikki
things.
Ward.
No, last night, the two people who love my show works in a hospital.
Yeah,
and this was they could only see one other show and then mine. You know, that
you
night.
For people who can't see
shift
day shows.
Yeah. I have people who work in the venues come to my shows. I have people who really love comedy but don't get the chance to see comedy, and then they come to me and they sometimes think they haven't seen comedy, but that's fine. That's absolutely fine. But they always see something, and there will be some people who go, "That's the best thing I've ever seen," and will come to sometimes every single one if they can, because the fun in my gigs is watching how someone else reacts to what's happening. If you're in on the game, for example, I always explain in my gigs that the thing that's funny is when you understand nothing funny's happening. And then that gets really funny when you're looking at other people who think it's going to be funny, so they're not enjoying it. And then we create this kind of loop between these people. And then someone else walks in, and the people previously that weren't part of the game, now they're not the people who don't know what's going on. And so now they're unified, and this person's going, what happened? Like at the end of the first gig, there was these three people who came in 5 minutes to the end, and to put it simply, I was eating a lot of cheese. And
so you're trading off the rage of people who don't know what the fuck this inside joke is.
The bemusement,
yes.
Rather than there's no rage. There's not a lot of anger. There's confusion. And they were these three girls came in, really loved the last 5 minutes, but they were shouting, "Eat the cheese! Eat the cheese! Eat the cheese!" And then turning to each other and saying, "I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's happening." And I turned around to them and went, "I'm eating the cheese."
And I have weird dudes who keep throwing cocaine at me.
Have you ever been reviewed?
Wow.
Yeah,
really?
I had coke thrown at me.
I have been reviewed. But
he's had coke thrown at
him. First of all, I've had cocaine thrown at me. And guys have gone, "Put you in a beak in that, pal." And I didn't do the coke. And then they were like, "Boo."
What waste?
Well, I didn't know. There's no real surface that I felt like I could go and do the coke in. And I said it because I said, "I don't do coke anymore. I'm afraid of having a heart attack." And then they just tossed coke at me. Then I didn't do the coke. And then they threw hip flasks at me.
Wow.
And then I said, "I don't do random hip flasks. I do lager." And then they left and came back with beer. And then the review said
this
that
is
it,
like
it was
the
a, it was
dream
a, it was a stag
audience.
Yeah, and they said it feels like a stag. I didn't set it.
Phil privilege.
Yeah, I didn't.
Phil privilege. Right. There are not many stag dos at this point. So, Phil privilege. You have had a genuine Edinburgh experience.
Wow.
And you should be thankful for it.
I've had about 7 free pints in my show so far. People are bringing me things.
This is fantastic.
I get beer all the time. Or do you want a drink? Do you want to? You know, during the show, because I say anyone can leave any time they want if they want to come back and leave the room, and they normally go, "Oh, okay, then I'll go get a pint."
Wow!
But I've you know, if you watch like the comedy from the 80s and early 90s, the audience was very like vocal.
Yep.
Like there was none of this. Let's sit, watch it.
Yep.
You watch Richard Pryor, you watch Eddie Murphy. Yeah. That audience is giving them.
Man, I fucking
giving it
what
back.
I love about I love. The only thing I really, truly love about stand-up comedy is marshalling energy. Is I love it when it's coming in and then you go on these stream of consciousness rants and you let the audience, you're fighting with the audience, and you're making them laugh and then they're angry at you and you come back at them again. But when they sit there like it's a theatre show, I'm like, I don't do it like that. I don't sit there.
You don't do comedy to be listened to.
I want them to be in it. I want to push with them. I want to ask them questions, and then I have my things prepared, obviously, but I want to feel some flow. If I'm not doing a flow state show, I just check out of the fucking experience.
So that's kind of what I do, but without any material.
Yeah.
Right. So, General, sir, how do you... Obviously, you like to control. It's kind of the job title. how do you see your... I mean, people are dicing with their censure of the most painful and physical kind if they don't react the way you want them to, but...
What I have grown to realise over the years, I hear you in terms of that audience interaction. What I have grown to realise is that people want to interact with the president.
Yep.
You can't just deliver a speech or a set. They will just find it so boring. They want to be involved. I give you an example today. Today, I wasn't planning, you might know this, I wasn't planning to cover for Trevor Locke. I saw a post to say Trevor Locke wasn't feeling very well. So I went to do the show at 2:45. When I arrived there, they were waiting for Trevor Locke.
At what point did they guess Trevor wasn't appearing?
So they were all gathered, and I just thought, yes, there's an audience. So I just said, hello, I'm here to tell you that Trevor Locke has been kidnapped. And there's been a military coup. Boom. So you can decide whether you want to stay or whether you want to go. However, you cannot leave. You should come in. But what was really interesting is at one point I thought, how is this going to work? Because they are here for Trevor. However, I have seen Trevor's shows. And if I remember, unless he's changed his shows, they include audience.
It's all about the audience.
It's all about audience.
All about the audience.
So it worked in that sense, because I also have audience interaction. But as a character comedian, they're expecting it. They're expecting that interaction. I mean, just delivering a set or a show for an hour without that audience interaction, I think they will feel shortchanged.
Be on TikTok or something.
Sorry?
I mean, they'd rather just be... If you're just going to do the set...
And the things that happened in the room, you know, because I kept referencing,
it's fucking
Trevor's
human.
Not here, but if you're not enjoying it, I will release Trevor so that he can come. So I think we all have different...
Like my favourite sets of this festival so far have been, every one of them has been at this free fringe venue, and I'm at the counting, I go to the counting house at the 5 o'clock show. People are drinking. My back, I have to walk through the... I can't even be in the room because they fill it up and I slide through this curtain and my back is against the wall like I'm at the Comedy Cellar in New York and the audience is so close. And if I was to move my elbow, I would hit someone in the head and I just yell my set and I'm just full of this energy and it's so... And it's I'm getting booed, I'm getting cheered, I'm in, I'm out, I fucking love this shit. And then I leave and I go to my venue... And all ticketed venues just feel so stale to me afterwards.
Yep.
People are sitting there like, what have you got for me? And I'm like, oh, fuck, I've done it wrong. That's it. Like, I don't want to be up on this, on the higher stage and, ladies and gentlemen, prepare for the show.
Yeah.
Sit down, get yourself a drink. Ugh.
Yeah. Please welcome to the stage.
So I've been to 2 paid shows today and they were good. They were really good.
Nabil Shell, Nabil Abdul Rashid, and Joe White, who's from Australia.
Oh yeah, Joe, I like Joe.
Yeah, yeah, they were good shows. But then I've had the Free Fringe experience. I have to say to you, there's just something about the Free Fringe, because it's, even though you might have all the stuff that you've written, there's just something, happens.
The Free Fringe is a night that you're having some drinks and you fuck someone in a toilet. And then a theatre show is booking a nice hotel and having a dinner and trying to have a romantic night on the fresh
that,
new sheets.
I don't want to use that analogy, but okay.
That's what it is for me. Everything comes back to sex. It's like it's prepared romanticism. And it can be, it can be magical, but there's just something about just doing it there in this dirty, horrible environment.
Yeah, mine's more like a slow, sad wank. But I see your point.
I think we've all enjoyed a slow, sad wank. Yeah. You know?
You say that like it's a bad thing.
You can speak for yourself.
Trust me, it is a bad thing the way I do it.
Yeah. But what's really interesting as well, having done 3 fringes, I'm still a baby, is how you have people who go to the paid fringe who also want to come to the Free Fringe. There's something that they want to see. It's almost like discovering oil. They want to see something that they can't see in the paid fringe that they know that they will see in the Free Fringe. Fascinating.
When Peter Buckley Hill started the Free Fringe, it was an exceptional thing, because way, way, way back, everything was ran very close to the ground. Everything was very basic. And then the big venues came, and then the big venues got bigger. But Peter Buckley Hill started, it was a show. It was one show. Mm-hmm. Peter Buckley Hill and some comedians in the Cannon's Gate. And that was it. That was the whole Free Fringe.
Which is one of the reasons I got into comedy.
Really?
Yeah. Well, so...
that sounded so... Really?
No.
I thought you were trained, groomed.
Yeah.
Oxford Bridge.
7 years of Gaulier. Yeah. So I came with a show. I didn't even know I was a comedian, really, at the time.
Some people still don't know.
Yeah, but I know now. And one of the things I used to go to was Peter Buckley Hill and some comedians every night.
Yep.
Because he always had a completely different lineup, and they were really good comedians.
And he is a fucking genius.
And Peter was one of the best hosts that I've seen. Like he could play with the audience. Yes. He was that good at being a compere.
And he also, sorry to interrupt. Well, not really. Sorry, not sorry. He has this wonderful thing that he is, as Mark says, he's really good at being a compere. But he also has so many little quirky things that he always does that if you do go regularly, it's like you're part of a family. Mm. You know, there's all these little
Easter eggs
and call and response things. And it's wonderful. And I can't remember what year it was. I'm going to say this. Although, you know, I like the some of the ways that the Fringe is finding to get kind of rootsy and opening up spaces. But Peter started it. Peter developed it. But there's nobody else can actually hack the way Peter does it, which is to stick to the ethos, which is nobody pays anything and everybody helps one another. It's a very community thing. With the Free Festival, the Laughing Horse Free Festival, it was the free thing, but then you go, this could be quite successful. And so you go,
well now it's like it's a mandatory, like, £5 to £10, right?
And it's free, but if you want to guarantee a seat, you pay in advance and it's pay what you want, but I'm sorry, my ticket machine doesn't take anything less than a fiver. And, you know, they're great shows. What is really totally fucking tragic is that the one group, because, you know, then Just the Tonic came and there's loads of people. The group that is kind of struggling is the Free Fringe, largely. It's not I've been to see two Free Fringe shows today. They were rammed. It was fantastic. They were the first shows that I'd been to that were rammed. Yeah. So that's really good. But it does just seem that because comics are, generally speaking, to use an overview term, cunts. selfish, selfish, self-obsessed. It's difficult to have this ethos-based way of organizing things, which the Free Fringe is, with the various difficulties that brings. When everybody's going, oh, well, I'll sort of do the Free Fringe, but I'll do it that way, or I'll do it that way. And Peter, it can be brutal if you go, well, look, Peter, what about if we kind of did that? It'll take your head off.
But even, like, if you look at what the Free Fringe is for me, I mean, isn't the whole point of it? For me, at my best case scenario here, this is essentially a Free Fringe in that I will break it. Like, at best case, like, wow, maybe break even. So it would be, you come up here and you go, I just want to play to people, I want to do my stand up, I want to have great shows, I don't need any money in, out, I just need accommodation that isn't so fucking expensive that I can just come up here and showcase and that's it. I think most of us would agree to that.
I don't come here to make money.
I disagree, because a lot of people are platforming themselves.
Do people make money here? Like,
no, it's about platforming themselves and letting agents and agencies know they're prepared to play the game. They're prepared to play the system, and they want that. They want someone who is prepared to do the advertising, to do this, to do that. What a lot of agencies do is they front the money for the act, and then the act has to stay with the agency and pay back the money over a period. So therefore, the agency is losing out.
I'm in a very weird position, right? Like, I have no interest in breaking the UK. None. Zero. I've wanted to be an American comedian forever. I live in the United States. I came here, did the festival as a way to catch up with my friends. And I also thought, shit, I can get like 90 spots. I'm going to do my hour so many times, and I'm going to reverse engineer my next 30 for the American road, and fuck, it's gonna be, and I have a monastic experience in this shit accommodation where I will only be happy if I am producing comedy. Like, this is the whole thing for me. And people are like, you've got to get to this abattoir bar, there's this guy from bar. I don't give a fuck. I actually don't. Now, I would be lying if I said that in America, because I do care about my career in America, because I think like that's where I've chosen to go, and that's where. But now that I'm truly out of it, I am like, what? I mean, if you're here for any other reason than just going, I've got this new fucking 5 minutes about Rolexes or whatever, this dumb thing I'm trying to get up with, then it seems stupid.
Well, people have different goals and objectives. Yeah. And I think, for me, I posted recently, just it was aimed at comics to say, why are you going to Edinburgh? If you cannot answer that question, then don't go.
I mean, without doubt, it is the place where you can play to the fucking world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Wherever else you are, you're going to get the audience that goes there.
Yeah.
Here, whether, you know, you can play one way or another to just about everybody.
But I've found I haven't made too many friends here with my thoughts on British stand-up at the moment. But what I've seen from a lot of the
I regard you as a friend, Amy.
I keep saying these,
fucking
like,
ignoring me.
Well, look. I just keep seeing white stand-up male comedians. This is all their material. This is my impression of a British stand-up comedian that I see.
Go.
My dad is a man. He's a man, and I'm more of like a man. You know, I'm not like as manly as my dad. My dad's manly. And then they go, my dad said this bigoted thing. And I go, well, fuck me, he sounds funny. Like, your dad seems to have said the only mildly humorous thing in the fucking thing, and then you've straw-manned some argument where you get to be a hero and knock it down, and I go, this is so dull.
And that's what's great about The Fringe, because I disagree with almost every one of your opinions.
Yeah.
And yet, and yet there's still space for me as well.
Yeah.
You know, yes.
How much stand-up do you see where the whole concept is like, I'm not that manly, and then I watch him in the bar be a fucking creep?
Not a lot. Like, you're a fraud. Not a lot, because I don't go to those shows. But if that's what you like, it's fine.
That's what he likes.
But it's the thing about the Fringe is that the Fringe has everything in it. There's something for everyone,
yeah.
And there's space for everyone of every type. Now, why that's good for me is because the thing I want already exists. So outside of the Fringe, I have to make that space where the thing exists. So like I have a night, a comedy night that I run, then I book all the people I want, just so I've got the kind of space I want. Whereas at the Fringe, that already exists. That's the, and it doesn't almost anywhere else, you know, because I run a purely alternative comedy night. Now, that just doesn't happen anymore anywhere.
Yeah.
But at the Fringe, you will get purely alternative, you know, lineups and things like that.
What attracts me to the Fringe is just the creative freedom. The fact that you can actually,
carry on, but then I want to say something.
Yeah, that creative freedom. I just feel at times restricted when I play at comedy clubs, that it's going to be 20 minutes, it's going to be in a certain way. I just come in here and I do, whether you get me or you don't get me, this is what's really interesting. Audiences get me and they want to see something different. So I hear what you're talking about in terms of, why they want to see something different.
Well, you ask and see, the American system is very different to yours. I know you guys just, the clubs is like 20 minutes of kill.
Yeah.
Whereas America is, as a solo act, you go do 60 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Whoa,
I'm moving to America.
It's a show.
It's a show. So we do a show. And I had these American, like some people I truly admire came to see me the other day, and I went to speak to them. And this guy produces for some amazing stand-up comedians, their specials. And he was like, dude, he goes, I just watched all this comedy. And he goes, there's like 25 people on earth that do great stand-up. And he goes, and for some reason at this festival, people are adding all these bells and whistles. And he goes, and it's one thing to be an alternative act. And you are a true alternative act. But there seems to be a lot of people who are not an alternative act adding some bullshit into the show. And because they think stand-up's easy. And he's like, to do good, just standard stand-up is not fucking easy.
No.
And they pretend like it is. And it's like, well, I won't just do regular stand-up. And he's like, well, please do. And do it
but
better.
But they couldn't. They could.
But I can't.
No,
I just want to. I know I'm a regular stand-up. I'm not an alt act.
Yep.
But I just want to do the best version of that. And I'm not going to cram in some faux alternatives and some faux narrative and pathos that doesn't exist.
Yeah. But what was really interesting is when my uniform went missing, someone said to me, "Oh, your props have gone." My uniform is not my prop. It was never ever a prop. And I remember someone called. Trying to remember her, she says, straight stand-up comedian, and we were just having a chat at the green room, and she said, "Obonjo, you do stand-up comedy. You're just in uniform. I don't get this character comedian thing, and the fact that people think you are behind the uniform. You tell jokes." Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? But go on.
Just one thing. Talking about things being stolen. In my last show, I have a sign, like a neon sign, that says "Calm."
Yeah.
That I give to someone, and I say, "Look, you have to keep calm," and I hand them this sign, and I say, "If anyone's stressed, just stare at the calm," and it's at the back of the room, so they have to stop looking at me and look at the back, stay calm. And last night it was stolen, so if it's not a calm environment anymore, I did try.
Indeed.
So it's not my fault. I'm not buying another one. I'm not buying another one. What happens at the Fringe stays in the show.
Well, you raised your hands when I spoke about creative freedom.
What I was going to say, it's especially this year, it's been happening maybe a little bit over the past sort of three Fringes, but this year, there are, if you actually look through the comedy section and you go, these people are doing stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe it's half the comedy section of the brochure, maybe it's less. Because everybody, and it's a way out of having to, it's why I worry about the whole 50-minute show thing. Especially when people are actually quite shit at stand-up. Because what that does is it gives them this marvellous out where they don't really have to write comedy. They don't have to write an hour of stand-up or 50 minutes of stand-up.
Noted.
What they do is they go, well, probably haven't got that number of laughs, but...
Yeah, 20 minutes of club.
What I'll do...
20 minutes of pathos, bit of crowd work. Shit on
so,
the room.
Yeah, it's a little bit of crowd work, but an awful lot of these people aren't even good enough to do crowd work. Yeah. So what you get is My Brave Struggle with... It's kind of a TED Talk. It's more of a me and my ADHD, yeah. Me and my this, me and my that. But it's... And so that gives them a load of padding. One, there's narrative in there and whatnot, so that takes up a lot of time that should
that's
be
why,
taken
that's
up.
That's why I admired, as an Australian comedian, I always admired when the Americans came to town, they would come to our festivals, and it was just a scheduling error, basically, where they were made to be a part of this festival. They didn't know. They were just selling tickets, and their producer said, you'll come at this time. And they're doing this festival show, and you would watch Bill Burr or whoever, and he would do his hour, and he would do that hour at a comedy club, he would do that hour at the festival. It was his view on what he was doing that year, and it was 60 minutes of his banging material. And there was no... It was just, this is good enough to do everywhere.
Yeah.
And I am going... And it's so...
Yeah.
It was ubiquitously great. And he wasn't going, I'm at a festival, I'm just doing this. It was just good stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
But if it's good enough to go anywhere, it doesn't need to go to the festival.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
But why shouldn't
I'm saying,
it?
Why shouldn't it? It's a comedy festival.
Well, I'm not saying it shouldn't, but I'm saying it doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to, but like... He would do that, and then all these people would say, it was just a straight stand-up hour. And all these Aussies would go, yeah, it wasn't good enough. And I go, but why?
But no, an hour of
good, hour.
Good comedy yeah. is good enough.
But yeah. what
I agree with that. But I'm just saying there is space for that kind of thing. But it is much more marginal than it used to be. There is not the comedian. There's plenty of comedy, but there's not the comedian. There's not the solo comedian doing their comedy. It's someone doing a journey, someone doing a talk.
Actually,
I love a lot of those shows, personally. But there are a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and there's an awful lot of them are really badly done, and there's an awful lot of them are being done instead. You get to do that in a fringe festival because you can pretend it's meant to be.
My best friend when I started stand-up comedy, and my hero is Greg Fleet. Okay, I'm not sure if you guys know who Greg Fleet is, but Greg Fleet.
Yeah.
Had stories to tell, okay? And like his show, 10 Years in a Long Sleeve Shirt, amazing. It's about his lifelong addiction to heroin. And then he had Tie Dye, which was about him in Thailand and then joining into a militia. And he had these amazing stories because his life was like that. But then he would have a year where he wouldn't do that because he didn't have an interesting fucking story to tell. And he was like, I'm not going to cram it this year. It didn't come. And then alongside him, everyone else would try and do a storytelling show. And I remember thinking, you don't have it this year, man. Just give it up this year.
The thing I would say about alternative performance.
Yes.
It's not always comedy.
Is that
comedy, alternative comedy, it's easy to do something that looks bad because it's bad.
Yes.
And a lot of people do that. I think personally, I do comedy the wrong way very well. I think I'm very good at doing comedy how it shouldn't be done very well. But there are a lot of people that I feel can't do a traditional stand-up routine, so therefore they move towards the more alternative areas. And sometimes that devalues some people who are doing alternative comedy very well because someone looks at something...
Do you see it like other art in that... the alternative acts I love. Like, there's people... I don't go and watch that much straight stand-up. I want to go watch crazy stuff in the festival as well. But there's something about knowing that that person can do it and opts not to that makes them seem like a more legitimate alternative artist because they go, yeah, I get jokes. Like, it's fine. I understand how this works. But I'm opting not to. And then I respect it more for some reason because I go, this is a choice, not a only option.
I could do straight stand-up.
If
I need to do straight stand-up, I can.
The oddballs, you know, the alternative, genuinely alternative, are... I think that's wonderful. I go and search it out. The people I have a problem with are people who don't have the quirk or the bent to do the genuinely what the fuck is this meant to be, alternative stuff? And they're not just not funny enough to do gags and jokes and stand-up. So they basically do, yeah, I was diagnosed with this, a father died, this happened, I got divorced, my ingrowing toenails giving me gout. It's because that gives you a kind of...
The best stand-up comedians have always done that, but you don't even walk away going, oh, it was a show about his fucking horrible divorce. You go, I crush. And then you go, oh, it was about divorce. Yeah. It was about a molestation. Yeah. Like, I have a bit in my show, not that I do this year, but my first ever one, it was about a man taking me to a room and molesting me. And I remember doing it, and it was a club bit that it was just very funny. I found it to be very funny. What happened, and I did it, and at no point was anyone like, you've got to see this bit about it, who's molestation, because I was like, I'm doing it to be, it's just a thing that I have found a way to make funny.
Yeah.
I it's in the act for no other reason. I don't think there's any special reason for it to be there. I don't go like, and everyone needs to hear this. They don't.
Yeah.
Well, there's good beats in it.
I mean, here's the thing. I'm pro-trans, I'm pro-abortion, I'm pro all those things. It's not on my show, because that's not fun. How I do comedy.
It's too good to be comedy.
It wouldn't be funny if I did it.
Yeah.
Because it's not my story. It's their story to tell.
Yeah.
So that's fine. But you do find a lot of people making references to it when it's not their story. So, and I think a lot of the times that's people just trying to
get on the bandwagon.
Yeah, get on that. But no, I think, you know, yeah, totally pro-trans. And I am, you know, pretty much anything that I think is right, I'm for. But you'll never really hear me. You'll hear me talk about it off stage, but you won't hear me talk about it on stage because that's not my act.
Yeah.
And I think people do build...
Well, there's a big straw man... I don't know, like, I can speak of Australia. The thing that I've always fucking hated is people who set up the straw man. And this bigot said X, Y, and Z. Yeah. And I said this. And I put them in the place. And aren't I on the right side of everything?
Yep.
And then I've always loved, like, I love the Richard Price stuff as well. I like, man, I'm pretty fucked up. And I've got these, I've done bad things, and I have these bad thoughts, and I can be bigoted. I'm like, make it about you a little bit. Like, did you really put that person in their place, or did you just invent this and fabricate this to seem like a great guy? Because that's so dull to me. We can all faux make up a line that we said, and we were the hero of the day, and that to me is the most boring. And I used to do that, and I look back at that, it's so shameful.
Do you ever? I mean, simply because for a couple of comics who got banned, got deplatformed for it, it's a big thing. Even though, you know, we're talking 8-9 years ago. Do you ever address the N-word in your act?
Nope. Because the dictator wouldn't, but...
Good point.
It's not an issue, but what is really interesting... Look, I genuinely think that you should be able to say whatever you want to say on stage. Just be ready to deal with the consequences of it. And take responsibility and ownership. So I believe, yes, there's freedom of speech. And you can say whatever you want to say. If you want to use the N-word, yeah, so far you can deal with it.
Personally, I believe in freedom to reply.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there may be freedom of speech, but there's also freedom of not to... It's not freedom to listen. It's freedom to speak. That doesn't mean you have to listen to what that person says.
And that is, like, for me, as one of these, you know, if people that would hate me would be like, this fucking edgelord or whatever. The one thing I've always despised more than anything... is if you're going to be up there and go, like, I'm purposely wading into some culture war and people are going to hate me, if you dare to be like, they said bad things about me and they're trying to cancel me, it's like, yeah, cunt. you're being a provocative person and they hate you. You can't then be like, oh, it's not very nice. Like, prepare yourself to be hated.
They
can do that.
There is a certain amount of someone going to a show called, for example, 50 jokes about black people, and then going to the show and going, do you know they told jokes about black people in their show. You know, and
there's one that's happening, and I think it's brilliant. It's run by Shay Bunny. It's called Black Showcase. And it has all black acts and then one token white comic. And it's just brilliant.
Can you book me on that?
Yeah. No, if you want to do it, I will link you up. I did it today. I headlined it. And there was this white comic.
I got this N-word bit.
But it's a black showcase, but it's full of white people coming to watch black comedians with one token. Yeah, and he does things like he will interact with the audience. So, what's your name? Oh, and say, oh, it's Kate. Oh, let me feel your hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but so it's, there are that creative freedom. That's what I enjoy about the fringe. You can see anything. Yeah, straight stand up, whatever you want to call it, go there, see what, and enjoy yourself. That's the key thing.
I was like, the fringe is traditionally very, very white. As you know, it's traditionally very, very white. And I was, I noticed this year, it's like, I was like, it's a lot less white than usual. It's like, it feels like, but then I realised.
Is that across the board, do you think?
What I realised was happening was I was just looking at the amount of people who weren't white in town, and I realised it was predominantly delivery people.
But also,
Uber Eats and Just Eat.
But also the cost of living. The cost of living, has hit people hard,
Because, for me, America, the revelation, America is the black stand-up community keeps the flame going in that country for great stand-up comedy that is wild. Because if you do it, I do a room called Chocolate Sundays in LA at the Laugh Factory. Chocolate Sundays, and it's just all black people. And a couple of the guys love to put me on. And
as a talking white guy.
As a talking white. So just letting you know again, tell your booker I've done this stuff before.
Okay.
And I've been a talking white before. I've
got, don't worry.
But that room, black stand-up in America is the dominant force. And so if you're a kid from Australia that comes over there and you're in Hollywood, you will be following five of the most forcefully charismatic black stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
And you better get your fucking rhythm in order, because these guys destroy the room. And it's like, and it has, it washes across all American stand-up. It's like, if you're going to do comedy in a black room, it's got to be really fucking good. They don't have any time for this wankery.
They're not forgiving.
No forgiving.
Oh!
it's get on with it. And what are you trying to say?
Yeah, say it.
And they love white people to talk about them, but they're like, make it fucking real.
Yeah.
Don't tell me about how you worry about us and, you guys are... They're like, give us a real assessment. But tell me exactly what you think. And so I come over there, I talk about the camp, the tent cities, and how black people camp in America and Australians love the outback, and I'm trying to make some connection, and you do it in an alt room and it's horrific, and you do it on Chocolate Sundays and they're up and about, and then they're like, they're yelling at you, that's shit, you're fucked. Then you get them back, and it's like, I love this real energy of comedy, of instant feedback for, we're not digging what you're doing here.
Yeah.
Or we are appreciating this. And that's what I think. I feel this is a very white scene.
Yeah.
A very, and in the tone of it.
It's very precious.
Mm.
Very precious scene.
It's very precious.
Yeah.
It is.
It needs an invasion. No, honestly, I have been doing it for 11 years. But I think I need... I think dictators are underrepresented in the comedy circuit. I want Kim Jong-un, Putin, Assad to be part of the comedy festival.
That's wild. At this time next year in Edinburgh. Now, what you need to do is tell us when your show is on and where your show is on.
Okay.
And... I saw a marvelous show last night. It is very, very funny, but it's in the opera section.
Yeah.
And there's a naked man in it. You never thought when the uniform went, you might,
I don't honestly think that the Edinburgh audience is ready to see a black dictator's dick.
Wow.
Yeah, from New Clothes. But... My new show is called African Zelensky.
Right.
And it's all about how Zelensky and Obonjo were friends.
Nice.
Because Zelensky used to be a functional comedian. And then all of a sudden, Zelensky has now become president, Obonjo is still doing the Fringe. Something has gone wrong. So hey, it's all about friendship, jealousy, and also about the African perspective.
You need some NATO money,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
And also, on a serious note, the African perspective in terms of what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. Because the West is only hearing what America is telling you, but there is also something happening in Africa where Russia...
The BRICS, baby.
BRICS, exactly. You know what I'm talking about.
I want to be BRICS. Listen, I want to be BRICS's comedian.
And there's something going on at the moment. There's a shift that people are not fully aware of, and I try to address that in the show.
Listen, as an Eastern European...
Sorry?
Where?
It's Voodoo Rooms. It's the only place. Voodoo Rooms.
Yeah.
Voodoo.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, it's Voodoo Rooms. It's sporadic. It's sporadic. So the one tomorrow starts at 2:45, finishes at 3:45. Then I got another one at 4:45. Then I'm at the Bannerman's. Banshee on the 10th. I'm all over the place. Just all over the place. But just Google. There is only one African original dictator in Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year. But maybe next year, maybe you can help me. Someone said the only way I can excel in this comedy career is if I become a gay dictator. So I'm looking for a gay pill.
Wow. Okay.
Why are you gay?
Why are you gay?
Speaking on behalf of Scotland, we've accepted you here.
Yes.
We've welcomed you in.
Yeah.
And you're insisting on wearing knickers under your kilt.
Yes.
When are you going, we can't, you're spitting in the face of Scottish tradition here.
Well, so are you suggesting that when I go on stage tomorrow in my kilt, I wear no boxers?
I'm telling you, you can't. Otherwise, it's a cultural insult. You are in the capital of Scotland.
What do you think?
Free the dick, man. Get it out.
Yeah.
Get it out.
Let it breathe.
You know the inspectors come around at random.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Scotsman.
Yeah.
This is what I don't like about this Edinburgh Fringe. I never get spoken about my shows. There's always something about anything else apart from my shows.
Oh, here we go. It's a challenge. I wouldn't feel comfortable reviewing a guy who's wearing a kilt with knickers on underneath. It's okay. Unscottish.
So, I will do this for you.
Yes.
Because I think you want to see me naked, don't you?
Well.
General butt naked.
General butt naked.
Yeah, I wouldn't say no.
Okay, tomorrow. In short, I was planning to go back into my uniform. I bought myself a new uniform.
Yeah.
But I'm going to wear my kilt.
One more time.
No boxes.
How can I resist?
And then you can come and review it.
Yeah. Well, the show was shit with a dick. Oh, my God.
No way.
Amos.
8:30, Gilded Balloon, nightclub. Every single night. That's the show. I am here till near the end. I've got to go home for a fucking wedding, unfortunately, at the last weekend.
Whoa.
I know. My girlfriend's brother's getting married, and so I've agreed to go back to that.
So you're cutting
it
short.
Isn't it? Although the dad's paying me $2,000 to roast his son.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah.
So that's the only money I will be making in the month.
Yeah, just check that flight booking. Did you say the time?
8:30. You told me that. I thought that was a late show, and you were like, that's not fucking late.
Nah.
It's not those shows.
You were like, you're wearing a leather jacket, you should be on late. And I thought, I am late. And then this man here, the 150.
Now, that's
the
virtually
real.
The family slot.
Yeah, it is the family slot.
Get yourself a puppet. Mark.
Is this enough? 150, Banshee Labyrinth. And before you come, it's not.
It's not enough.
I know.
Yeah.
But that's.
It's a wrap.
To tell you the truth, I've been surprised Mark has been so bubbly and effervescent.
Told you, not performing before 1:50 a.m. this Fringe.
So it's on tonight.
So this is not how I am.
No.
Well, this is how I am, but not how I perform. So I couldn't do what I would do in my show, so I'm not allowed to do it before 1:50 a.m.
Right. That sounds fine. So, as you can see, things are hotting up here at the Beehive.
Yeah, it's called the Beehive. We've got a bit of a hubbub going.
With what?
We've got a hubbub.
A definite hubbub. I think they might have had their last show. So all hell could be about to break loose here.
This is great. It's a great festival.
Is this your first time?
I've never been to this festival before. I put it off.
So you're a virgin?
And I'm a virgin to
comedy virgin of festival.
I'd heard about it forever, and I am always like bitchy about comedy, but...
No, no, he's been ruined.
It's good, man. I was worried about doing this.
Why?
Because, I think dissecting comedy is the death of it. But
no,
yeah.
this is not
only
a joke.
When you do it, I'm really good at it.
Yeah. This is very meta and everything, yeah, you know. I'm a hall of mirrors that I'm funny if the right music is played.
This is not a Joe Rogan podcast.
It's a Kate Thompson podcast.
You guys tried cold plunging? It's great. Saunas.
Marvelous, right? Well, we've all got things to do, places to be, homes to go to.
Yeah, that's true. You were fucking 20 minutes late, so I've given up on those things now.
I'm so sorry.
This is my night now, so you're responsible for what I'm up to.
I've got to go and have my lunch.
So you have a show tonight?
Yeah, 1:50. Wow.
Tomorrow morning?
Yeah.
No.
Edinburgh night finishes 4 a.m.
Okay, Edinburgh night finishes 4 a.m.
Yeah, it officially does.
So we're all going to go and enjoy the rest of our night.
Yeah, thank you.
So when does this come out? 24 hours.
The day after tomorrow.
Okay.
It's an elaborate scheme for friendship.
Yeah, exactly. We're part of a comedy punch scheme.
None of these microphones work, you know.
Tell three friends about this. Get three friends to tell them about
it. It's amazing who you can hang out with if you have four fake microphones.
Wait until you get the ransom note.
Please take a photo of me. I want to send it to my wife.
Is this proof of life? You want a newspaper with today's date on it?
Yeah. Sunday
Times. Yes.